Welcome to the Ordinary Extraordinary Cemetery, where every death had a life and every life had a story. My name is Jenny Johnson.
Hello, and I'm Diane Hartshorn.
And today we decided, instead of sharing a new story, which we've done quite a few of lately, we would actually share some of the events that are going on around the country that take place in cemeteries. There's this time of year, especially a lot of cemeteries ramp up what they're doing to try and get their final fundraisers in for the year before winter hits and be ready for next spring when they can start their preservation work and all of the things again. So if you live anywhere near any of the ones we're going to feature today, we hope that you will attend the events and learn the history of the cemeteries and help with their preservation efforts.
Yeah, because a lot of times these are the fall, these are usually their only, you know, annual once a year fundraisers. So yes, right. Definitely support a cemetery if they happen to be in your neighborhood. Our first event takes place at Albany Rural Cemetery in Albany, New York. The event is called Ask the Historian, an Open House, and is scheduled for Sunday, September 12th from 8 a.m. to noon. Open House at the cemetery. Whether you are a regular visitor, haven't visited in a long time, or you've never visited before, here's a chance to ask questions about their history, the Civil War, monument cleaning, as well as just general cemetery questions. It will also be a chance to join their friends group, buy books about the cemetery, including Paul Grondahl's These Exalted Acres, or maybe even sign up for their volunteer list and more. Additional details coming soon. So you can check out their website, and it's free. The best part, it's free, and it's a rain or shine event.
Yes. And we will be sure to link the website for you guys in the show notes today. So you can go to the website and find the link to their website for their updates. The next event is hosted by the Green Lawn Abbey Preservation Association in Columbus, Ohio. Join them for the second annual Green Lawn Abbey Classic and Exotic Car Show on Sunday, September 12th. So same as the other one, but now you're in Ohio, not New York. Also from 8 a.m. to noon. The car show is sponsored by Driveway Details and Land Grant Brewing Company. The lawn will have a unique selection of classic and exotic cars. Enjoy food, beer, wine, and cocktails with live entertainment. Tickets for spectators are just $5. Tickets will be available to purchase upon entry with cash or card. Car registration, if you're interested in taking your car, is $25. To register your car, please email Stephen Wink at wink.stephen@gmail.com. All proceeds go towards their preservation efforts.
That is a cool idea.
I saw that and I had to laugh because you and I just talked about having cars in a cemetery the other day. And we were going to work on a fundraiser that involved classic cars in the cemetery. Yeah, so,
and I love classic cars. So.
So do I. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, we have to share that event. So,
yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll be able to do something of our own like that down the line. We'll let you guys know.
And of course, we just had to mention our own event here in Colorado at Evergreen Cemetery in Colorado Springs. Join us if you dare on October 8th at historic Evergreen Cemetery. Our haunting tours bring to life the macabre stories of the master of macabre himself, Edgar Allan Poe, told in ways never before witnessed. Your tour visits the most historic areas of the cemetery as these stories are told. Your visit concludes at the historic Evergreen Chapel, where a very special guest awaits your return from the graveyard. Delectable refreshments and libations await your return. Do you believe in ghosts? You may after this event.
I get goosebumps just thinking about it. Proceeds benefit Evergreen Heritage. Evergreen Heritage works tirelessly to preserve and restore the historic monuments at both Evergreen and Fairview cemeteries. Ticket sales end 7 days prior to the event, so make sure you get your tickets before it starts. All tickets must be purchased in advance. We will not be selling any at the gates. Groups are limited to 20 guests per time slot, and the tours leave every half hour. And the length of each tour is approximately 1 hour. So once your tour starts, it should take about an hour. Evergreen Heritage, aka Evergreen Cemetery Benevolent Society, is a 501c3 nonprofit. And we would also like to thank Front Range Theater Company as a co-host of this event. And we, again, have included links to all of these events in today's show notes for you guys.
And it's no better way to kick off the Halloween season than supporting your local cemetery.
Exactly. I mean, like I said earlier, it's sometimes this is kind of the end of the year for us, and then we're ready for preservation events. And who doesn't want to go to the cemetery after dark? Like so many people are like, I want to go. But of course, for the cemetery's sake, most of them are closed. So,
right. So we're very excited.
Now, before we get right into our episode, I do have a question, and I'm going to ask it for you, Diane. And then hopefully listeners, if you want to chime in either on social media or email us your thoughts on this. So I had an interesting conversation today with a gentleman about visiting cemeteries for the purposes that we visit, which is to photograph them, to document them. We're sharing their stories. His feelings are that we are encroaching on these solemn places, that they aren't places to be shared publicly. And I've seen that sentiment on occasion. And I'm just curious, I don't feel like what we do when it's historically related like this, that it's an encroachment. I'm hoping that those buried there and their families can appreciate that we're still trying to continue their stories and their legacies. But I'm just curious, Diane, if you've ever come across something like that or what your thoughts are, and listeners, you too.
Oh, definitely. Because my own personal experience, Evergreen is, you know, it's a fairly large cemetery, and people have made comments about people riding their bikes through it or, you know, anything else. But if we don't make the public aware of these cemeteries and sharing the history, because what we are doing is focused on history. We're not out there doing anything that's disrespectful to the families or to the headstones or doing, like I said, anything inappropriate, that if we don't keep these cemeteries and their stories alive, people are going to forget about them and they're not going to care about preservation. So it's sort of like an ostrich burying its head in the sand.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, and my other thought too, so many cemeteries, and not all of them, there's been several cemeteries that I have visited that are not, but so many of them are designed to be parks and park. I mean, that was the original intention of those cemeteries, was to create a public space where people came and strolled and visited and had picnics and, you know, did all that. And I know some cemeteries have done away with picnicking and stuff because of trash and people sitting on headstones and stuff. But again, there's still places that are meant to be visited. The dead are meant to be remembered. The whole purpose of a cemetery is to remember the dead. We had to put them somewhere, but also the reason headstones are created is in their remembrance. So if we don't visit them, and if we don't document them, and we don't try and tell their stories, we lose so much. So I just wanted to get it was just an interesting discussion I had, and I thought I would bring it up here, and I would be interested in what our listeners feel about cemeteries in that regard.
Well, in a cemetery, cemeteries are for the living. They're not for the dead.
Good point. Very good point. I like it. All right.
And now on to today's episode, in which we will be paying tribute to some of the cemeteries of Door County, Wisconsin, and specifically to their Belgian settlements. According to DoorCounty.com, Door County is defined by its proximity to Lake Michigan and the Great Lakes. These waterways are why many nomadic settlers would camp here, and they're how the earliest permanent settlers got around and sustained life. Residents have worked as fishermen, mariners, and shipbuilders, and others worked as loggers and farmers, relying on ships to transport their wares. In the 20th century, Door County shipyards were producing as many as 5 ships a day to keep up with the military's demand for large boats and other sea vessels.
Which I don't know if a lot of people equate Lake Michigan with that kind of work, but
right. They
do it. When visiting Door County, you will spot roadside Belgian chapels, British Victorian homes, Swedish-influenced Stavkirke, which are churches, and Björklunden chapels, and Viking-inspired Thordesen boathouses, to get a feel for the people who settled Door County and made it what it is today. One of the main immigrant populations to the area were men and women who traveled to America from Belgium more than 170 years ago. Belgian immigrants were often given the advice to go where the maples are, and that's exactly what many of them did, settling on the shores of the mighty Lake Michigan.
Wisconsin's and the nation's largest Belgian American settlement is located in portions of Brown, Kewaunee and Door counties adjacent to the waters of Green Bay. Walloon-speaking Belgians settled the area in the 1850s and still constitute a high proportion of the population. A variety of elements attest to the Belgian-American presence. Place names such as Brussels and Namur, Rozier and Luxembourg, a local French patois, common surnames, unique foods such as boya, tripe, and jut. The Kermis Harvest Festival, and especially architecture. Many of the original wooden structures of the Belgian Americans were destroyed in a firestorm that swept across southern Door County in October of 1871. A few stone houses made of local dolomite survived. More common are 1880s red brick houses, distinguished by modest size, gable end, bull's eye windows. Some houses have detached summer kitchens with bake ovens appended to the rear. And the Belgians, many of them devout Catholics, also erected small roadside votive chapels like many of those in their homeland.
It's very picturesque there.
Oh, yeah.
I've been there once and it was so beautiful and picturesque. So if you live in Door County, you're extremely lucky to live in such a gorgeous area. The first cemetery we are going to visit today is called the Little Cemetery in the Sky. In 1866, residents of the Gardner area grew tired of making the long walk to attend church in the larger neighboring community of Brussels. So they pulled their money and built their own church, naming it St. John the Baptist. Resident John Joseph Robin donated the land on which the small church was built. A small parcel of land located next to the church was consecrated to be the local churchyard. However, when they attempted the first burial in this ground, it was discovered to be too rocky for creating graves without using the assistance of dynamite.
The citizens of Gardner decided that they still wanted to make use of this land as they had already gone through the process of consecration. Rather than relocate, they dragged more stones from their own fields to create a rectangular enclosure measuring 25 by 50 feet that measured about 4 feet deep. Then, with no mechanized equipment, they undertook the arduous job of hauling dirt, filling the retaining wall, and leveling it off. According to historian H.R. Holland, the handmade cemetery stood above the surrounding fields like the first story of an Egyptian pyramid. For this reason, it was given the name the Little Cemetery in the Sky.
It just sounds so great.
I know it does.
Unfortunately, in 1871, St. John the Baptist Church became fuel for the Great Peshtigo Fire that ate its way across many of the Belgian settlements in the Green Bay area. However, as is so often the case in human history, the folks in the area rallied and rebuilt the church. This second church was in use until 1895, when it once again burned to the ground. It was at this point that the settlement chose not to rebuild. Because the fire destroyed all of the church records, the number of people buried in the little cemetery and their identities are unknown.
After the church burned the final time, the local bishop deeded its land back to John Joseph Robin's son for $10 and the promise he would keep the cemetery fenced and in good condition. Unfortunately, it received no further care and became so overgrown with weeds, brush, and sumac that it was indistinguishable from bumps and mounds in neighboring fields. In fact, there were many in the Belgian community who believed it never existed except as a legend.
According to the book Door County Stories and Stories from the Belgian Settlement by Paul and Francis Burton, there were, however, others who knew it was real. In the late 1920s, some young boys brought home what they thought were animal bones, but their parents immediately recognized them as human. Others remembered that during the same era, boys occasionally brought human bones to grade school, bones that had washed out of the cemetery.
But then in 1974, a man named Clyde Robillard bought some land in order to expand his orchard. Once he began clearing the land, he discovered the little cemetery and made efforts to clean it up and make it a place of sacred memory once more. Clyde, along with his father and members of the nearby St. Francis Xavier Church, chopped brush, reinforced the crumbling rock walls, filled in sunken spots, and smoothed the top. When finished, they erected an unpainted wooden cross. Clyde tried for at least 25 years to persuade a church to take over the care of this consecrated ground, but despite many discussions, no church was willing to assume responsibility, and the cemetery is once again unkept.
Which is really sad.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. The cemetery can't be seen from the road, and there's no easy access. Its location at the back of an orchard is as obscure as the names of the people buried there. Wind sweeps through the prairie grass that hides the rock wall and bends young trees that now cover the substantial mound. It's a neglected but peaceful place, with just one indication that it's a cemetery. There's only a cross, said a neighbor. This is all that remains of the little cemetery in the sky.
The next Door County Cemetery we are stopping at today is the little burial ground belonging to St. Mary of the Snows Church in Namur. If you drive by this cemetery, you will see that the 68 stones are placed very close together, almost as if those they honor may have been buried standing upright. The story of the church, the tombstones, and the frame building is part of the larger story of St. Mary of the Snows. It is a story that highlights the faith and persistence of early Belgian settlers.
Most Belgian immigrants were devoted Catholics, and before the first churches and cemeteries were built, they held religious meetings in their homes. Those living in Namur area, then called Delwich, met at the home of Guillaume Delwich. Once each month, a French-speaking priest walked nearly 30 miles from the Bay settlement to say Mass for the gathered settlers, all of whom spoke Walloon, a French dialect.
In 1860, these settlers managed to construct a small log church in Namur on 3 acres of donated land. They dedicated to St. Mary of the Snows. They now had a church, but they still didn't have their own priest because French-speaking priests were in short supply in northeast Wisconsin. The fledgling church, one of the first in the Belgian community, was considered a mission and was served by traveling Holy Cross fathers who came to the community intermittently.
As happened to St. John the Baptist in our first story today, St. Mary of the Snows Church was also destroyed in the Great Peshtigo Fire of 1871. And just like the pioneers in Gardner, the settlers in Namur pooled their resources and rebuilt the church 3 years later in 1874. This second church was much larger and could accommodate 100 families in the area. They also built a brick rectory, hoping to entice a permanent priest. Despite the size of the new building and the presence of the rectory, the church was still considered a mission, and until 1890, it received only sporadic visits from priests.
In 1889, parishioners added a school in the form of a one-room annex. Three Holy Cross sisters came to Namur to teach in the new school and live in the rectory. It was a difficult assignment for them. They didn't speak Walloon and the language of the children, and none of the children spoke or understood English. Living conditions were also difficult, as the unused till now rectory was in deplorable shape. One sister wrote that there was very little furniture, and the pillows and mattresses for one bed were stuffed with cattails. This was reported by Mr. Collert. Despite the primitive conditions, the resolute sisters persevered in their assignment. You know, the sisters, more times than not, were given some very tough jobs.
They were, but the good ones took them seriously, like these ladies.
Yes, they did. Unfortunately, the church and the school once again burned to the ground in 1892 after some children attempted to build a fire in one of the heating stoves.
And once again, the settlement chose to rebuild their church on the same spot rather than abandon it for something new. The families of the parish donated their money, time, and materials to rebuild the church. But due to a lack of funds, the school was not included this time around. By 1892, the shortage of French-speaking priests was so acute that the bishop begged the Premontrain Abbey in Holland to accept responsibility for Belgian parishes in Door County. The following year, a Dutchman, Father Bernard Pennings, arrived to take charge of St. Mary of the Snows. This dynamic man found plenty to occupy him in Namur. Although the church building was newly completed, the school hadn't been built, and the sisters were still living in the rectory, intended as Pennings' lodging, and conducting classes on its second floor.
One of Penning's first jobs was to get a new school up and running. He persuaded farmers, financially stretched them by construction of the church, to contribute sacks of grain according to their means. Proceeds from the sale of the grain were used to build a new school. Located close to the church, the school building was plainly designed. The first floor contained a classroom, living room, dining room, and kitchen. Upstairs, the single large room was used as a dormitory for the sisters and any children who lived so far away they couldn't return home at night.
In the 5 years he served St. Mary of the Snows, Father Pinnings became a much-loved figure. He left in 1898 for Des Pierres, where he established a school that eventually became St. Norbert's College. The school he nurtured at St. Mary's remained in service for 30 years until it was closed in 1925. The local Belgian American Club purchased the building in 1965 and moved it a short distance to its present location. The club uses the old school as its headquarters. As for the church, through the years, St. Mary of the Snows continued to serve the community, with its priests caring for parishioners from baptism through burial. Burials took place in the cemetery located in front of the church, a tradition dating to the medieval practice of burying the dead as close as possible to the remains of saints, who were often interred under the church floor. In 1970, the priest in charge of St. Mary's became convinced the cemetery could be used more productively as a parking lot. Without consulting the congregation, he had the tombstones moved to a small area beside the church where they were lined up in four rows like soldiers at attention, each stone just 6 inches from the next. The bodies remained to be covered by asphalt. Unsurprisingly, this action did not endear this particular priest to his parishioners, as many of them were outraged by his actions.
And this is why it is important to share the histories of the cemeteries so things like this do not happen in the future.
Exactly. And at the very least, we know where those bodies exist, even if they're not where their tombstones are located.
Yes, exactly. Today, declining attendance has forced St. Mary's of the Snows to close its doors. The stories of the tombstone and the schoolhouse are nearly forgotten. But at the edge of the parking lot, the U.S. Department of the Interior has erected a marker telling one more story. It places the entire Belgian community, the largest rural settlement of Belgian Americans in the country, on the National Register of Historic Places. The marker tells the story of the hardy Belgian farmers who settled the area, among them those who were determined to maintain their church alongside the big curve in Namur.
Yeah. And if you go there, in addition to the gorgeous landscape and being near the lake and all of that, the food there is also delicious. I'm just going to point that out because everything you read about Door County, if you go to their website, if you look in the books, if you, whatever you read, they're going to talk about their cuisine because they have such a mishmash of like European mm-hmm. cuisines there that you can, it's yeah. Ooh. And of course, they have a lot of their own fresh farm foods that they're mixing in with that cuisine. So all the fresh dairy, all of that. So again,
sounds delicious.
Yes, this sounds like a whole promotion for Door County. But if you're in the area, go to Door County. Or if you're trying to plan a trip somewhere you've never been, it's a great place to go visit. There is a quote by Alan Bloom in the introduction to the main book that I used to research this episode. It is, "We need history, not to tell us what happened or to explain the past, but to make the past alive so that it can explain us and make future possible." I believe that it is so true. Each one of us that is alive today is here because of all those who came before us. It is their stories that we strive to share with you each week on this podcast, that they may live on helping to shape and create a better world now and for future generations.
I could not agree more. Thank you so much for sharing these stories with us today. And all the stories that Jenny found on Door County, Wisconsin. We can't wait to share brand new ones with you next week. In the meantime, please visit our website at theordinaryextraordinarycemetery.com to find the resources we used in today's episode. You will also find the links to the cemetery events we shared at the beginning of this episode. Even if you don't live near one of these events we shared today, be sure to check out your local cemeteries to find out what they may be doing and give them a visit.
And of course, if you want to see more information on history, quotes, etc., everything about cemeteries, visit us on Facebook and Instagram at Ordinary Extraordinary Cemetery or on Twitter at Ord Extra Sim. Let us know if you enjoyed this episode by leaving us a 5-star review and a note on Apple Podcasts or on our website. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Until we meet again.